Hi, this is Cynthia Davis. All this escalation of sexual perversion in our faces is getting tiresome. I don't know about you, but I can see the culture getting darker every year, every week. There are new stories about what's happening to kids and the social costs. It's evil, downright evil. We don't always know why. But on our show today, you're going to find out what is at the root cause of this social chaos. You'll leave with a much deeper understanding of the problem, and you're going to be encouraged by what you can do about it.
I'm an American! Red, white, and blue. And I'm a citizen of this world and of heaven. Some things were meant to be together. I believe in faith and freedom. Got a country too. I believe with faith and freedom, we're gonna make it through.
Welcome to Homefront. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host, and I'm here to help. From parenting to public policies to political advice, join me in taking America back one family at a time. As a speaker, writer, former legislator, mother of seven, and wife of one for over 30 years, I bring you my experience.
Don't lose your freedom.
And now it's time for Homefront.
Don't lose your freedom. Let's talk about it.
Welcome to Homefront. Today we have Scott Lively. Scott is an American activist, author, attorney, and former Massachusetts gubernatorial candidate. He is the president of Abiding Truth Ministries and Redemption Gate Mission Society. Welcome, Scott.
Great to be with you, Cynthia.
Well, it's great to have you here to answer some of life's most perplexing problems. The latest one, I have to say, is really smacking all of us in the face. But first, I want to talk a little bit about how you got involved in being an activist. What happened to spark in you the moment when you said, I'm not going to sit on the sidelines anymore. I need to do something about this.
Well, I was an alcoholic and a drug addict for 16 years from the time I was 12. And at the age of 28, I surrendered my life to Christ. And I went from being on the other side of the fence on all these issues. I was very liberal and the Bible and learning the truth of God completely transformed my mind. And the real trigger for me was when I saw pictures of aborted babies. And it was so shocking to me. I thought, this is, you know, something people, Americans must not know what's going on for this to be happening. And so I got deeply involved in the pro-life movement during the height of the rescue movement. And I became the communications director for the Oregon Citizens Alliance, the largest Christian political group in the country ever in terms of a grassroots network. Pat Robertson came and looked at our model before he started Christian Coalition. And then the election cycle that I got involved with there, we did ballot measures, was a pro-life issue. And the next election cycle, it shifted to dealing with the LGBT agenda. And I had my eyes open to that. I recognized it as a greater threat, even though abortion is a greater evil in terms of an act. The homosexual movement represents a greater threat to America's biblical and constitutional foundations because it's an army of activists dedicated to overthrowing Judeo-Christian society. So that's really how I got started, coming from the other side, and developing a biblical worldview and recognizing I had a responsibility as a Christian to stand up.
Okay, so I'd like to land on that concept you brought up. You said abortion is the greater evil, but the homosexual agenda is a greater threat to Western civilization. Did I get that right?
Yes, that's right, because abortion is a consequence of the sexual revolution. The LGBTs are the driving force of the sexual revolution. It's really the this is really their ball game, and has been for a long time. It was the Harry Hay was the so-called father of the American gay movement. Was a teacher of Marxism for 18 years before he founded the Mattachine Society, late 40s, early 50s, and it's always been about transforming the society. In the beginning, really, they only focused on tolerance, what Dale Jennings, one of the leaders, called the right to be left alone. And that was sort of like their modus operandi for a long time. But then with the Stonewall Riot in 1969, they shifted their focus away from tolerance toward gay supremacy. And that's what they've been pursuing ever since. And they pretty much accomplished that goal over the past 50 years.
I think I can understand what you're saying, because while abortion is very wrong on many levels, it only affects our reproduction rate. It eliminates members of our society who otherwise may have been here. But the homosexual agenda is changing the way we live. It's the changing the way bakers can bake cakes and the way florists can do their work and photographers can do what they do. And every business alive has to face and confront the reality that lawsuits over this agenda are a problem. Go ahead.
Well, it's more fundamental than that, because this goes to the essence of who we are as human beings in a civilization. We have a Judeo-Christian civilization that's grounded in the presuppositions of the Bible, and that those include the idea of marriage and the natural family. It's the foundation of everything, and that but the sexual revolution is about replacing that with anything goes sexual morality. Now, this came out of the gay movement. It's this group of people, it's this community that must overthrow straight America. There's actually an article. Every single person should go to the internet and should find, just type in "The Overhauling of Straight America," that title, "The Overhauling of Straight America," and read that article, 1987 article, about how the gay movement was going to overthrow straight America, and they've actually accomplished it, and it's in very frank and forthright, surprisingly frank terms. They actually just state it right out. The title is an example, exemplifies the sort of mentality when they wrote it. Now that article, "The Overhauling of Straight America," was then turned into a book, and they changed it all into marketing language, and they hid their motives. But that's what they set out to do, to normalize homosexuality. You can't come right out and start saying we want homosexuality to be normal. You get thrown in jail because that was so foreign to the culture. So they had to get heterosexuals involved in sexual promiscuity and perversion. They had to sort of denormalize marriage and family and the sort of culture of against promiscuity, and that's what they did. And the Alfred Kinsey was the first real activist, the real agent, who pushed the idea that all sex is perfectly normal, that homosexuals make up 10% of the population, that the heterosexual population is far more deviant than anyone was admitting. That came out in the Kinsey report in 48. The study about men was 48, and 52, I think, was the one about women. That was followed by Hugh Hefner and the porn industry, which took Kinsey's ideas that there should be absolute sexual freedom, and put pictures to it and through with Playboy magazine and really launched the porn industry. I mean, this is a long-term strategic plan to change heterosexual culture, get everyone dirty in the deal, so that when it came time for homosexuals to come out of the closet and take their place at the head of the parade, no one would resist. Now, in order, if you're going to reach that place where sexual freedom takes precedence over family values, there's some things that have to be done first. And 1966, Griswold versus Connecticut established contraception on demand. And the purpose of that was legalize and facilitate fornication without consequences. But, of course, condoms don't always work. People don't always use them. And so lots of babies were being conceived as a result of this new culture of promiscuity that was emerging in the 50s and the 60s. And so the answer to that in 1973, actually before that, the abortion industry is the backup plan to contraception. That's really all it is. And the reason that it became an institution is to preserve the opportunity for Americans to continue in a culture of fornication and adultery. Why? So that they would become so morally corrupted that gays and homosexuality itself could be normalized and be equal in society. And that's what, you know, that's actually the theme of the human rights campaign, the equal sign is, and they achieved that. Right? And then it went from, there's five stages really of this: tolerance, acceptance, celebration, forced participation, and then punishment of dissenters. And so we've seen that over the course of these 50 years, went from tolerance to acceptance. Celebrations started happening in the 1980s or so, all the gay pride parades, and then forced participation, where they're actually forcing, especially in public schools, they're forcing the kids to now embrace gay culture, to learn everything that there is, to look at people like the pederast Harvey Milk as some kind of cultural icon. People are working in various government agencies forced to march in gay pride parades. And then in some places in the country, they reach the end stage where if you do not go along with the agenda, you're literally punished. You lose your job. You're pushed out of your tenure in the university. You're turned into a pariah. That's what I'm talking about.
So just to repeat those again, the five stages are
tolerance, acceptance, celebration. Forced participation is number four, and punishment of dissenters is number five. That's the pattern. Mm-hmm. And then they started out with a demand for tolerance, what they said called the right to be left alone. Then once they had tolerance, then they began demanding acceptance, which basically means an equal place at the table. And we gave in to that. Once they had a place at the table, they started pushing everybody else off the table, anyway, that disagreed with them, and then began demanding that homosexuality, the whole LGBT coalition, be celebrated by society. And that's when the gay pride parades came in. And then wherever they got that level of power, then all of a sudden they began to force people to participate in the celebration. And then in the places where they achieve that level, then anyone who would not go along with it is then punished in some way. And that's where we are today. Most of America is on the cusp of celebration and forced participation. And the cities that would have the greatest amount of power, you know, the deep blue major cities across America, people do not even dare to speak out against the agenda for fear of serious consequences.
You're right there. I have real stories from real people, especially, well, when you started off caring about the pro-life issue and then you realized mm-hmm. this is a greater threat. Well, at some point, they all become part of the same ball of wax. And right. A lot of people are unhappy with Planned Parenthood because they sell baby parts and they do abortions, but they don't realize how much evil they promote by their education arm going into public schools and normalizing everything deviant you can imagine. And they have been the big people out front on that. So what's going on lately? I wanted to talk to you about this drag queen story hour movement. I know that a lot of libraries have done story hour for decades, but why do they need to bring in drag queens? What's that all about, and what are you seeing out your way?
Well, this is a national phenomenon, and this is just, remember, this is a pattern, right? This is all driven by Marxism, right? The philosophy that underlies all this is cultural Marxism. More and more Americans are becoming aware of this, but there are many who aren't yet aware of it, that there are four forms of Marxism. Marxism itself has always been about the overthrow of Judeo-Christian civilization and the replacement with, building on the ashes, a socialist utopia. That's their, global socialist utopia. That's always been the plan. The four forms of Marxism that have emerged that have all pursued that goal are communism, socialism, fascism, and cultural Marxism, or what we call humanism. And the three first forms, communism, socialism, and fascism, all used economic tactics to try to destroy the Judeo-Christian society. But they could never succeed. Whenever they would establish a totalitarian system, the people would always overthrow it in time. But the cultural Marxists realized the reason for that is because they were, as long as the family remained intact, the foundation of society, there would always be a resistance to taking away natural rights. And so cultural Marxism shifted the focus away from economic tactics to the sexual revolution. Herbert Marcuse, who was the brains behind cultural Marxism at the Frankfurt School in Germany, in his writings, he wrote extensively. In fact, he came over here to the United States. He was the darling of American intelligentsia for years, from the 30s. Columbia, Brandeis, Berkeley, all over. And he wrote extensively. It all really sort of boils down to two sentences from his writings. One, he defined the problem as, quote, the repressive order of procreative sexuality. In other words, making babies, right? That's what he called a repressive order of procreative sexuality. And the solution to that problem in his mind as a Marxist theorist, was the disintegration of the monogamic and patriarchal family. This is straight out of his work. That the answer to the problem is disintegrating the family, getting rid of monogamy, and getting rid of male authority in the homes, the patriarchal system. And that's what the left has been pursuing ever since. He was really the sort of the gray-haired, guru of the entire leftist agenda. And that's what happened in June 28, 1969, in the Stonewall riots, is the gays adopted Marcusean radicalism as their new platform, and from that point forward, they began pursuing gay cultural supremacy in America. They became the foot soldiers of the Marcusean Marxist strategy, and that's why they've been so enormously successful. Now, standing against that has been the church, primarily. Well, it used to be the society of American society was God-fearing, and we had a consensus that acknowledged biblical values as good and right. But systematically over time, that was all eroded until the point right now, here we are in 2019, it's almost all gone. And the hard left is running almost everything. They've infiltrated all the major institutions. They run public education from top to bottom. They're in control of almost all the major information systems, news media, academia, government agencies, the foundations, and now even the corporate world. The National Chamber of Commerce has been given over to the LGBT movement. And the only thing resisting that anymore is just the Bible-believing and Torah-believing Jews, Bible-believing Christians and Orthodox Torah-believing Jews. That's it. And even the Republican Party, which has long been the home of Christian people who are Christians who happen to be interested in politics, that's crumbling about as fast as it's right in front of our eyes. It's disintegrating. And so they pushed this agenda step by step all the way through, and then in 2015 we got the Obergefell gay marriage ruling, which was basically the nail in the coffin on the homosexual issue for us. And then they shifted from homosexuality to transgenderism. And I never really thought about it, never realized before, but transgenderism really is worse than homosexuality because it goes to a deeper level of Judeo-Christian civilization. The homosexual agenda is about the destruction of marriage and natural family. Transgenderism is about the destruction of human sexual identity itself. The binary nature of male and female is being attacked right before our eyes and dismantled. And because the gays have achieved so much power over the course of this time, it's like it's an unstoppable juggernaut. They have more political power than any other force in America, which is why Trump won't stand up to them. He does it somewhat in secret, but he caves and has to pay lip service to them and just to try to blunt their impact. But that took them all the way up through the Obergefell gay marriage fight, and then when it shifted over to transgenderism, all the resistance that we had in the battle against gay marriage was almost all wiped out. And so now we have this outrage of adult homosexual men dressed in these gaudy, outrageous, hypersexualized costumes, reading gay children's books to three-year-olds in the public library. It's absolutely insane what's happened. And the entire leftist bloc is applauding. What has happened? It's like the Twilight Zone.
It is like the Twilight Zone. That is a very good description. I'll just tell you my own story, and I appreciate your explaining the ramifications because a lot of people don't understand what's going on. But I thought the drag queen story hour was something, a phenomenon happening in wacky left-wing states. And to my surprise, it's coming here to Missouri, too. By the way, they announced this year that Donald Trump is the first Republican president to commemorate Gay Pride Month. Did you hear that?
Yes, and very disappointing, very disappointing. But I think and on this particular issue with Trump, I believe that it's just simply it's all a political posture. He knows that the Christians cannot defend him on that issue. We have not been able to prevail in this fight through these 50 years. We've lost every single battle. Not because of a lack of power on our side, but every time it's gotten up to the Supreme Court, Anthony Kennedy killed us. Now, you know what? Let me explain what's going on here. Is that Anthony Kennedy, Justice Anthony Kennedy, who just retired, the worst enemy of the family in the history of the United States Supreme Court. He was the swing voter on the court of the nine. He was the guy that's supposedly conservative, but wasn't conservative. As a matter of fact, he's the one who established gay cultural supremacy through his Supreme Court rulings. Goes back to 1992. Actually, I was the communications for the Oregon Citizens Alliance, communications director for the Oregon Citizens Alliance, when we came forward with the No Special Rights Act, which would deny minority status based on sexual orientation. To step back a step even further back from that, the gays always push to get constitutional rights on the theme that that people should have sexual freedom, and that's part of the that's implicit in the concept of ordered liberty. That's actually their language. Well, JFK appointee Justice Byron White knocked that in the head in Bowers versus Hardwick in 1986. And even laughed at the idea, saying that homosexual sodomy is the suggestion that it's implicit in the concept of ordered liberty is, quote, at best facetious. And so Bowers versus Hardwick completely destroyed their agenda they had been pushing for all that way, all the way back from 69 all the way to 86. That had been their strategy and mission. Well, when they got stopped by Bowers versus Hardwick, they stepped back and they regrouped, and they began defining themselves as a minority classification, because if they couldn't get constitutional protection one way, they'd get it another. And so they hijacked the black civil rights movement and stole Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Push Coalition, started promoting themselves as a civil rights minority class, and frankly, that's when they started using the rainbow as the symbol of their movement. And everything at that point became legitimizing homosexuals as a civil rights minority. They had gotten significant control in the Democrat Party by this time, and they used that control to push for human rights commissions at the local and state level all across America. Human rights commissions that would come forward demanding that anti-discrimination policies be passed all over America at the state and local level, protecting all minorities against discrimination. And of course, sexual orientation was bundled with legitimate minorities in all those cases. Whenever they ran into too much resistance, they would put the other minorities in first, and then they would amend it later and add sexual orientation. Now, we saw what was going on with this, and so OCA, Oregon Citizens Alliance, came up with the No Special Rights Act, denying minority status based on sexual orientation. Now, we failed to pass it in Oregon in 92, but a sister organization in Colorado passed it as Amendment 2. Amendment 2 won quite handily and became the basis for the Supreme Court case Romer versus Evans, and which was decided in 1996. Now, we knew we had a slam dunk win. We had won the culture war with that, and it was going to spread all over America, because under constitutional analysis, you couldn't get minority status unless you could show political powerlessness, an immutable condition like skin color, and a history of discrimination. Now, they might have gotten away with that one element, but not the whole thing. But Kennedy, this is the first majority opinion he wrote of four that established gay cultural supremacy, cultural, legal, and political supremacy. He just simply ruled that because Amendment 2 was motivated by hatred, in his opinion, therefore the Supreme Court didn't have to do the normal analysis. They could just simply declare it void. It's outrageous, completely outrageous, that one man in the United States was basically able to nullify the will of the people and just simply say this law is not valid because I think it's motivated hatred. But that was the beginning. And then he wrote the next three opinions. Lawrence versus Texas, which struck down the sodomy laws. Well, actually, the plaintiffs staged an act of sodomy so that they could get arrested to put this before the court in Texas so they could take down Bowers versus Hardwick. So in Lawrence versus Texas, Kennedy struck down Bowers versus Hardwick, which had recognized the right of states to regulate sexual conduct in the public interest. And they had to do that because that's the only way they could then bring gay marriage in. So after Lawrence versus Texas, the next year gay marriage gets the gay marriage wave starts in Massachusetts, and then so the pro-family movement responded to that with the Defense of Marriage Act. And we won the battle in 35 states, putting the Defense of Marriage Act in place and put it into the federal government. So then Kennedy then rules in U.S. v. Windsor, striking down the federal DOMA, right? Saying it's unconstitutional, right? One man doing it again. And then followed up behind that with Obergefell v. Hodges. After they had used their power in the lower courts to start knocking down the state DOMAs based on U.S. v. Windsor, then they kind of came through with Obergefell v. Hodges, finding a constitutional right to gay marriage that doesn't exist in the Constitution. They created by judicial fiat, and that is was really the last nail in the coffin for the pro-family movement. And then the entire LGBT army shifted its focus to two things, the pushing transgenderism and infiltrating the church. And that's what's going on right now.
Well, talking about the disappointment in the Supreme Court justices, I've heard more bad things about John Roberts recently. Do you think he is going to be the next Anthony Kennedy?
I suspect that he is, but there's actually two of them now. There's Roberts and there's also Brett Kavanaugh. And Kavanaugh was Anthony Kennedy's law clerk. That's why I think he's got nominated. I think there was a deal made behind the scenes in which Kennedy agreed to retire early in exchange for his law clerk, Brett Kavanaugh, being appointed to the Supreme Court by President Trump. And maybe I don't think President Trump was necessarily in on Kennedy's purpose. Kennedy's purpose in that, if it happened, was to preserve his legacy. And I'm going to be watching. I think everybody should be watching very carefully what Brett Kavanaugh does on anything related to the LGBT agenda. And if he sides with the liberals on that, then I think that my conspiracy theory will be vindicated, and but worse for America, we will never see a reversal of this policy, unless, you know, there could be a miracle. You know, we could see a replacement of a couple of these other liberal Supreme Court justices, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and maybe one of the other ones. Who knows what could happen?
There was so much pushback against Kavanaugh that it makes you wonder, why would he have had such a struggle to get nominated? Was that all for show?
Well, that's what the left does. I mean, remember, this is the fight against Kavanaugh was a fight against Trump. It wasn't a fight against Kavanaugh. It was a fight against Trump, because they did not want Trump to be able to get a Supreme Court pick. And frankly, Kavanaugh is probably going to be a conservative on all the other stuff. That's probably the part of Trump's reasoning, to whatever extent he was in on this negotiation, Kavanaugh's probably going to be solid. He'd probably be solid on pro-life. He'll probably be solid on a lot of these conservative issues. But on the LGBT agenda, which is really the most destructive to American society of all, most conservatives wouldn't necessarily agree with that, but they don't know what I know. On that issue, I think there's a real risk that Kavanaugh is going to side with the left, and we are never going to see a return to a family-centered society. And that is what is going to, that will be the ultimate victory of the Marxists, because if we no longer have a family foundation to America, then we will be just sitting ducks for the Marxist, you know, global Marxist agenda, you know, the absorption of America into this global system. Now, Trump is opposing the globalists, and that's the best thing. That's the main reason I support him as vigorously as I do. I'm a strong Trump supporter. But how long will he be in there, right? And who in the world is like Trump that could follow him and take on these guys? They never give up. They just never give up. If our side, we get a victory, we pat ourselves on the back, we go home to our families and live our lives. These guys lose a battle, they go immediately back into the war room, because they live for war. they live, they have a proactive agenda, this vision for the future where they're going to bring about this egalitarian socialist utopia on Earth, and it completely consumes them. And so it's a tough battle to fight, but we have no choice but to stand up for what's right, even in the face of what seems to be overwhelming power and odds.
Well, let me talk to you about strategy and technique for a minute, because in my part of the middle of the country, we got one day notice that there was going to be a drag queen story hour, and that was obviously by design. So I ended up being asked to help spread the word and get some opposition going. I invited more than 100 people to come join us, people who are experienced at picketing and how to be effective and communicate. We talked about message and strategy, and one of my friends printed out 50 flyers to pass out to the parents, telling them what this is. Did you know? Assuming that parents may not know what they're exposing their children to. When we got there, it was pouring rain, nasty day in June in St. Louis. And I got there early. My friend went to pass out flyers, and I realized we're horribly outnumbered. There were only 3 of us who showed up. And when you're outnumbered that bad, sometimes you need to shift strategies. So she decided to stand on the outside. I decided to stand on the inside as a witness to what is going on and shifted into spy mode. So thankfully, I didn't stay next to her because she was asked to leave. And if I'd been with her, I would have been forced to leave as well, which is very sad for freedom of speech. But obviously what happened is one of the parents who got her flyer went straight to the librarian and complained. There are people standing outside who are passing out flyers explaining what they don't like about Drag Queen Hour. And so that's why she was asked to leave. I went inside. I was aghast. Days later, we found out this person is also a Satan worshiper. So there was a lot going on with all this, but I was amazed that the kids kept pouring in hundreds with very little notice. I don't know how they would have known even. I sat in the front of the room hoping to occupy as much space as possible to spare some other little innocent children of being able to have this foisted on them. And I was asked to move a couple times to make more room to squish in more kids. It started 15 minutes late because they were trying to get more kids in the room. The parents wanted this. There were dads with kids up on their shoulders because there was no more room to sit. And I'm saddened, but I could feel an avalanche coming down. If the parents weren't so enthusiastically embracing this, it certainly would have made our job a lot easier. And the librarian was overheard as saying, "This was such a success, we must do this again." I mean, libraries are struggling already for their validity, and people can get books and media.
Look, the American Library Association is about as left-wing as it gets, has been for a long, long time. And they're, of course, they're going to be very, very susceptible to any of this social justice nonsense. But at the same time, there are enormous numbers of children now under the control of homosexuals. I mean, the gay adoption has been going on as a tactic of infiltration for a very long time, and then plus you have the leftist churches. They have infiltrated. Gay theology has infected so many churches. Wherever you see the rainbow flag up in front of a church, a flag is a sign of conquest. That's what every conqueror does when he finally defeats an adversary. He plants his flag in the place of the original flag. And that's what's happening at these churches. Those churches now have been given over to a reprobate mind. They have now embraced a completely anti-biblical perspective of reality and have allowed this, even if it was a benign social movement, you don't give over your entire church to the pursuit of a narrow special interest agenda, even if it was a good one. But it's not a good one. It's evil. And yet that's what's happening. So that's, you know, so who is it that's filling the room and bringing all those children in there? It's likely that's who we're talking about. Talking about the local United, you know, such and such church and the Episcopals and all these that have, you know, for years they have been given over to this agenda. And it's just, it's atrocious. It's frightening. And it's very saddening. To see this happening to little children.
Yes, those children didn't want to come there. The adults brought them there. And dress up is sort of fun. They did bubbles and sang songs.
Yeah, they don't know what's going on. But that's there. And this is the bottom line of all this. This is grooming. This is grooming. The transgender agenda is the pedophile agenda. If that's what's really happening. What is implicit in this whole idea of children having self-determination about their gender identity? What's implicit in that? It's sexual freedom for pre-adolescence. And if a child is being granted the power under manipulation, the subjective manipulation by circumstances, the conditions that they live in, if that child is now being vested with the power to make the decision about whether they're going to become or make themselves look or have surgery to become look like the opposite sex, then how far a step is that than the right of children to decide who their sexual partner should be? And, you know, and frankly, going all the way back to 1972, that's item number 7 of the demand for states of the 1972 gay rights platform, removal of all laws governing age of sexual consent. So that's what's going on here. Drag Queen Story Hour is pedophile grooming that's taking place right before our eyes. And, it's like I said, just absolutely insane. It makes you sick to your stomach just to think about it.
Those children can't even join the military till they're 18. They can't even buy alcohol till they're 21 on a presumption that their brains aren't formed yet and they don't know.
They're being completely corrupted by the adults who care for them, being brainwashed in a perspective of life that is going to do them enormous harm. And it's at the same time rob from them and us the America that the founders gave us. That no society can stand when its children are transformed through this kind of social engineering. It's not possible.
Well, we are being transformed. The speed is quick. If we could do a time travel and bring people from Sodom and Gomorrah to the United States right now, they might feel very at home. I mean, it feels like we're in Sodom and Gomorrah right now.
Yeah, it's worse than Sodom and Gomorrah. This is Sodom and Gomorrah did not have this kind of Sodom and Gomorrah was adult homosexual perversion. This is worse. This is the systematic ritual defilement of children. It's just what's going on. And it isn't the end either. This isn't the bottom of the pit. It gets worse from here. The satanic agenda really has no end. Human beings will be defiled to every extreme of imagination before this is through. And And it's just we're watching it unfold right before our eyes.
Well, I was on a trip over the weekend, and yesterday I was driving through Louisville, Kentucky, just going through, trying to find the highway. And there was the 30-foot-high golden statue of a naked man. And the part I don't understand is most cities have ordinances against public nudity, meaning they don't let people walk around with no clothes on, but it's okay apparently for their statues to have no clothes on. So I posted this, and you can imagine if he's six times the size of a, or five or six times the size of a normal man, then all his private parts are five or six times as big. And
right.
It was
right.
Really pretty unpleasant to have that right there in the center of town. And so I posted a comment on Facebook of this is how far we've gone down the path of degradation. You know, it seems disrespectful to all men to have a picture of a man naked. It just didn't seem to make any sense. What surprised me was all the pushback I got from my carefully selected Facebook friends trying to really belittle me for making a comment about it. Like, that's artwork. What's your problem? I mean, and I'm like, how did we get here? How did
So, why didn't we have this kind of artwork 100 years ago? Right. That would be the question. Back. So are we a better society than we were then? We certainly aren't. And who is it? What kind of society wants this to be their artwork, right? What kind of population wants this to be taking the, and how much money did the taxpayers pay for this to be put there instead of something that would be edifying and uplifting? Right. These kinds of things are, and of course, Kentucky is in the Bible Belt. And so is Tennessee, where I am right now, and where they had a drag queen story hour situation recently here. I'm not sure what Tennessee city it was. I heard secondhand from another pastor, but anyway, that's what's going on. We need to be stating plain truth. And the Lord told us that when He would return, it would be like the days of Noah. And all of the scriptures warn us of, Paul in Romans chapter 1, warning us regarding the culture of apostasy. And in his letters to Timothy, 2 Timothy 3, for example, in the last days, perilous times will come. This seems to be taking shape before our eyes. We're told, though, that when you see these things happening, lift up your eyes, for your redemption draweth nigh. And that this kind of darkness is prophesied. It has to happen. It justifies God's wrath when He brings it on the wicked. All the people that are doing these things are going to face very severe consequences from their Creator, and that's not something we should be happy about or celebrating. But in fact, we need to be trying to get as many people into the lifeboat as possible. And they're doing us, in one sense, they're doing us a favor, because the more wickedly they act, the clearer the contrast between the light and the dark, and the more fruitful our evangelism should be for those who still have a heart that cares about truth and right. So that's the best perspective that we can have. That's the perspective I have now.
I know that we're outnumbered, and it's going to be hard to win elections if we can't even get more than three people to show up and complain. But I thank you for your wisdom and your thoughts and your encouragement. And I hope that you know how much we appreciate you. You have a great day, and I hope we get to talk to you again sometime.
Thank you. God bless you, Cynthia. Anytime. Focus on your families and your neighbors. Live redemptively wherever you are. Make things better within the scope of your influence. make bubbles of righteousness and peace wherever you are, and do it whatever you can to bring people into the lifeboat while there's still a chance to do it.
Okay, we're going to make bubbles of redemption and peace today. You have a good afternoon. Thanks so much.
God bless.
This has been another edition of Homefront. I'm Cynthia Davis, and I thank you for joining us. We're taking America back one family at a time. I sincerely hope you heard something that left you feeling inspired, motivated, and ready to engage our culture. If you enjoyed our show, you can find more at cynthiadavis.net. You can also find me on Facebook at Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Have a great week, and make sure you come back next time for another edition of Homefront.